The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday. In the Israel Update with Anthony Reich, only on High FM.
The never generic Anthony Reich, how are you?
I was enjoying Symphony, Howard, I have to say. I don't know if that makes it a little bit more naff, but but I was jumping up and down here.
I think such a beautiful song. Such a great, great song. Anthony, just getting into the news, an Israeli news report has revealed that President Trump intends to present his Middle East peace plan after the Israeli elections. It's also revealed information as to what might be included in the plan. But then I'm starting to see other reports saying that the Americans don't seem very, very happy with this report at all. Can you bring us up to speed on this, please?
Well, I'll try. I'm not sure that I really can. But, I mean, there was a report in on Channel 13 yesterday that spoke about an American source that has revealed some information about the deal of the century as it's being billed by U.S. President Donald Trump, and which is now expected to be rolled out only the election, which will take place on April the 9th. So I'm not quite sure if this is the way of the American team to buy a little bit of time and say, well, there's no point in rolling it out now. There's an election coming up in a few months' time. So, you know, that's kind of the time scale because everybody's been waiting the longest time to hear what exactly may be in this proposed peace plan. But of course, Jason Greenblatt was very, very quick to tweet yesterday that he doesn't agree with, he thinks that whatever was published in this report is not accurate. His tweet said the following: while I respect Barak Ravid, his report on Israel's Channel 13 is not accurate. Speculation about the content of the plan is not helpful. Very few people on the planet know what is in it. For now, that was Jason Greenblatt's response to this report on Channel 13 yesterday. But it might be worth just going through, you know, what was in the report, even if it's not accurate. I suppose at some point or another, we're going to find out. But apparently, according to Barak Ravid's report yesterday, something like 85 to 90% of the West Bank will be incorporated into a new Palestinian state. And according to his report, Jerusalem is indeed going to be divided up. And what he says is that West Jerusalem and some areas of East Jerusalem will be under Israeli sovereignty, will be the capital of Israel. And East Jerusalem, including most of the Arab neighborhoods in that area, will be the capital of the Palestinian state. And the controversial areas, which would mean the Old City, the Temple Mount, the Western Wall, those sorts of areas, would have Israeli sovereignty over them, but that the Temple Mount and the Western Wall in particular would be administered together with the Palestinians and probably the Jordanians, and perhaps even other countries as well would be involved in the administration of the Temple Mount and the Western Wall. That's going to be an interesting thing to have a part of the city of Jerusalem administered by committee. That's going to be a very interesting one to see. But having said that, you know, the idea is really to try somehow to divide things up, and that's apparently the way that the U.S. administration sees it, which means essentially that there would be a Palestinian state in more than twice the area that is currently Area A and B, which was kind of the Oslo way of looking at things. But what was interesting for me is that there was some comparison made to the proposal that Ehud Olmert, who was then prime minister, made to Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas back in 2008, which was rejected. And Olmert actually offered a near total withdrawal from the West Bank. He proposed that something like 6% of Judea and Samaria would be incorporated into large settlement blocks, and that the Palestinians would receive land in proportion to that, something like 5.86%. He also proposed putting the Old City and the holy sites under some international control. And that particular idea was rejected off the cuff. So it's considered that President Trump's idea, his plan, is actually even worse for the Palestinians than the one that Ehud Olmert presented and that was rejected right away. And so, you know, therefore, the expectation is that the Palestinians won't necessarily view this new U.S. plan with too much enthusiasm. And in fact, the White House has already said that they're expecting the Palestinian side to reject the plan, that the Israelis will probably accept it right away. So that seems to be some of the expectation that's going on. But I think that this is really all speculation. As we've seen from Jason Greenblatt's plan, Jason Greenblatt's response, I don't know if that response was designed to try somehow to throw some doubt around the plan so that, you know, it doesn't spoil the unveiling when it eventually happens, and who knows when it will happen, or whether it really is a rejection of fact. In other words, whether the facts that were presented are really not correct. But I suppose a time will tell. And in the meantime, you know, this has given a lot of newspapers things to write about and a lot of speculation that's arisen around this issue.
Fascinating. Absolutely. You know, especially when it gets leaked and then it's denied. It's always a very, very strange, strange set of circumstances.
It is a very strange thing. I think the one thing that I saw, which was a little bit different from what I've seen in the past, is that certain of, the current Israeli settlements, some of them will be incorporated into Israel, the large blocks, which was really always the idea. But then there was this idea that some of the smaller ones, on the other hand, some of those that have been set up illegally will be effectively dismantled and included into the Palestinian new state. Mm-hmm. But then there is this group in the middle which will neither be dismantled nor necessarily properly incorporated into Israel, but their expansion will be blocked, so that the idea is that they will effectively dry up, which is the term that I've seen used in some press, that these settlements will dry up. So effectively, just not to dismantle them, but just to allow them to die some sort of a natural death over time. So that seems to be an interesting idea as well. And I'm not quite sure whether it's really practical to expect that that will happen.
All right. And Mervyn says the 90% of Judea and Samaria is a big no. He's got a lot of exclamation marks there. I want to move on to the Malaysia issue. I did ask Louis Karpus a little bit earlier about it as well, because I found it incredible that this can be happening and this type of situation can be occurring today. And the position that it puts, of course, the World Paralympic Committee in, and that is, of course, that Malaysia has insisted that it will not grant a visa to Israeli athletes wanting to participate in the upcoming Paralympic swimming competition in Kuala Lumpur. So has there been a reaction from the World Paralympic Committee?
Well, there hasn't been an unequivocal reaction, but this is a very serious issue, because this event, the swimming event, is really serving as a qualifying event for the Tokyo 2020 Paralympic Games. And so therefore, if Israeli athletes are denied the right to participate in the event, they could effectively miss out on the opportunity to go to the Olympics in 2020. And that seems to be really crazy. And you know, there seems to be real discrimination going on here. And the point is that the Malaysians are due to host what they're calling hundreds of swimmers coming from 70 countries. The competition is due to take place at the end of July, going into the early part of August. And the Malaysian Prime Minister has said unequivocally that Israelis will be denied visas. We maintain our stand on the prohibition, he said. If they do come, it's a violation. And he went on to say that if the International Paralympic Committee want to withdraw Malaysia's right to host the championship, they can do so. He doesn't care. So that's amazing. Really the Malaysian government's position on this. And not for the first time, because back in 2016, the Israeli Sailing Association had to withdraw athletes from a competition in Malaysia because they were denied visas. And also, Israel had to pull its team from the World Team Table Tennis Championships, which took place in Kuala Lumpur, also following a row with the Malaysian government over entry visas. And then 2017, Malaysia decided not to host a FIFA conference because an Israeli delegation was scheduled to participate. So, you know, Malaysia is a serial offender where this kind of thing is concerned. And it surprises me that the World Paralympic Committee, with that background in mind, would even agree to put this competition in Malaysia in the first place.
Absolutely. I was going to say, that's the first question, is how on earth did that ever happen?
So I think that that's really, you know, something which the World Paralympic Committee will need to answer to, because, you know, Israel has always been a very, very strong participant in Paralympic sports activities. Unfortunately, we have many people who have been injured in military service and who are, you know, of the mindset to, you know, maintain a strong body and a strong mind as much as they can despite their physical injuries. And the Paralympic sports is exactly perfect for these types of people. And there are a lot of Israelis who are strong participants in the Paralympic world and good swimmers and you know, tennis players and is participating in all manner of Paralympic sports. And so I would have thought that the World Paralympic Committee would have been sensitive to the issue of Israelis participating in competitions, whatever they might be, whether they be swimming or anything else, and make sure that whichever country is chosen to host an event, such as the swimming competition, will make sure that they're allowing Israeli athletes to participate. I mean, that seems to me to be the most basic very requirement obvious. For any international sports competition these days.
All right, at 7:56, Anthony, the last thing I want to discuss with you is that it is rumored that Madonna will be appearing at Eurovision in Tel Aviv in May. Now, I've seen Madonna in Israel, actually, in Yarkon Park. We went to a concert there, which was absolutely outstanding a couple of years ago. So certainly she has performed in Israel before.
So yeah, Madonna has a very strong link to Israel, not only because she's performed here on more than one occasion, and she's certainly been a visitor to Israel, but of course, you know, there's been a lot of talk about her attraction to Kabbalah.
Oh, of course.
Kabbalah, as they like to say in America. We call it Kabbalah, but you know, I don't know if it's the same Kabbalah as they study Kabbalah, but she comes along here from time to time. Apparently she even had a bar mitzvah for her son, even though she's not Jewish, and she likes to keep Shabbat and stuff like that. So she certainly has an affiliation and an affinity with Judaism and with Israel in particular. She's been here on a number of occasions for various reasons. And we are understanding at the moment that the Eurovision Song Contest in 2019 has actually secured Madonna to come along and perform, which will be a huge scoop, because usually the Eurovision is a little bit of a kind of a backwater where music quality is concerned, and has really been the butt of many jokes about, you know, the quality of the artists who appear there and the songs that they sing. But certainly if Madonna was to appear, it would raise the standard quite substantially. Even though she's 60 years old these days, she's still very strong and she's an amazing performer. And of course, still a very much a household name. Her songs still appear and do very well, and she's still very, very active. I'm told that there's a little bit of a negotiation that needs to be done about exactly how much she's going to be paid for this. And I'm not exactly sure who's going to be footing the bill, because the money side of things has been a slightly controversial issue here about who's going to be paying the money. And of course, the other controversial issue, which I'm sure we're going to talk more about as the time gets nearer, is the fact that the rehearsals for the Eurovision, which always are held on Saturday night, and this year the final of the event will be held on Saturday night in the same way, but the rehearsals for the final will need to be on Shabbat. And that is somewhat controversial. It's been to some degree taken care of by virtue of the fact that the competition itself will be in Tel Aviv as opposed to in Jerusalem, so it's slightly less controversial. But there are already some names who have been invited to perform and who have refused to perform because of the fact that they're going to be required to violate Shabbat for the purpose of those rehearsals. And so this is certainly an issue for Israel. It's a very Jewish-Israeli issue. But there are people who are going to be opposed to this, and there are people who are going to withdraw from their participation because of the fact that they're going to be called upon to violate Shabbat.
Right. And in fact, we spoke earlier in the week about Omer Adam, who is one of them. And the amazing thing about him is that he is not even Shomer Shabbat. He's not Shabbat observant, but he made a decision sometime back never to work on Shabbat. And for that, he declined the invitation to perform. And of course, he's one of Israel's most well-known artist. I think it was an incredible gesture on his part. A very, very interesting one. And
so he's not the only one. I mean, you know, besides the Shabbat observant people as well, there are people like Omer who, you know, even though they might not necessarily be Shabbat observant, but in their public persona, want to make sure that Shabbat is respected. And so that's what they're going to be doing.
Incredible. Time is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich wishing you a fantastic, a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom. We didn't talk about the snow, that's all over Israel, but we are seeing pictures and talking about that as well. Keep warm. And
lots of video. Look out online and social media. Plenty. It's Jerusalem snow at the Kotel. Amazing scenes.
Incredible.
Cold and yeah, very good, but very interesting scenes in Jerusalem with the snow.
Have a Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
And we'll speak to you on a Monday.